In this episode, I'm going to share a sneak peek at the recent Invincible Career Job Search Workshop that I hosted on April 1st. In the previous podcast episode, I talked quite a bit about the connecting strategy when I was going into what would the agenda be and what I was going to discuss. But in this episode, I'm going to talk about positioning yourself and then dive into the broadcasting strategy. People have to know you exist. I'm Larry Cornett, and this is Invincible Career. So if you want to read this newsletter issue that goes along with this podcast episode, you can go to newsletter.invinciblecareer.com. This is issue 549, using my broadcasting strategy for your job search. So yeah, I just want to share a little bit of the workshop that I taught on April 1st, the job search workshop. And I'm going to apologize for my voice. I was just in the Midwest visiting family, and my allergies from 30, 40 years ago came back. It was kind of nice. They disappeared when I moved to California, but getting back in the grasslands and being around crops seemed to have triggered again. Yeah, as I mentioned, I had talked about the connecting strategy quite a bit in the previous episode. So if you want to go check that out, you can. I linked that in the newsletter. But I want to go a little deeper into a few things in this episode to give you a taste of what the workshop was like. And one is positioning, which is how you want to position yourself for the ideal jobs that I had talked about before. When you talk to people on LinkedIn, in your resume, your cover letters, all that kind of stuff, right? But then I'm going to dive into what I call the broadcasting strategy. Because if you want opportunities to kind of flow your way, if you want people to think of you when they see something or some opening is available in their company, they have to know you exist. They have to know who you are, what you do, and what you're looking for, right? So let me go ahead and dive into that. So yeah, in the previous episode, I talked about how important it is to get clear about what you want, what you're looking for, if you're looking for a new job. And let me say for a second, this is so important. Oh boy. I mean, I wish everyone was always looking for a job to some degree, because the best time to look for your next job is while you still have a job, even while you're still blissfully happy, right? I don't think any of us believe we're going to retire in a job anymore. We're not going to work in a job for 20, 30, 40 years. So you will have another job after this one, most likely, depending on where you are in your career. So much easier to find a job when you have a job. It really is. Recruiters and hiring managers like passive candidates, people who aren't looking for a job. It's also good for you because you're not feeling time pressure. You're not feeling financial pressure. You can take your time and only make a move if it's right. Only make a move if it's a great company and a great opportunity, a great culture. You're going to get promoted, you know, going to make more money. Instead of saying, oh no, I'm out of work, I'm desperate, and I have to take whatever I can get. So you should always kind of be looking for a job, even on a low simmer. So that's why it's so important to be clear about what is the right job for you, what's next. And that's what I had talked about before, is defining the ideal job, defining your ideal employer, you know, the company you'd like to work for, and your ideal boss. Super important too. And I don't think I talked about this in the previous podcast episode, but in the workshop, I had shown, we went through an exercise. So part of preparing for the workshop is I gave people a homework document so they could do some thinking about who they are and what their talents are and their skills and all that kind of stuff, but also what they've loved doing during their professional career and even their personal life. Like, what do they really love doing? What are they great at doing? But then also thinking about, what do you dislike doing? And making a big list of things like that, saying, yeah, you know, I don't like doing this at work. Never have. And what are you not good at doing? There's probably something you're not great at doing and you don't want to get good at doing. So making all those lists and then using that to kind of inform yourself to say, well, what would be an ideal job for me? You know, what am I looking for if I move into another job? And it could be, like I said, getting a promotion or a role in a dream company, working on a dream project. Some people have that in mind. Going somewhere where you can add some skills to your toolbox, you know, that kind of thing. And then what are the jobs you want to avoid? So these are important, right? These are important because if you're going to position yourself and look around, you have to know what you're looking for and what you want to avoid. That's almost as important. And avoiding work that drains you, makes you unhappy, stuff you're not good at. There might be specific industries or employers you don't want to work for. I know some folks that don't want to do anything with a company that manufactures weapons. I know other folks that don't want to work for anybody that provides gambling, for example. You name it. And I'd already talked about the ideal attributes of a job and all that kind of stuff. And nice to haves, must haves, that type of thing. But positioning is really thinking about, well, how do you sell yourself for that ideal job? Because it is really selling. It's selling, it's marketing. I've talked about this before, but if you think of your career as a business, it's selling you, the product of you. I've talked about that many years ago, the product of you. And an employer is buying that product. They are going to pay you money. They're going to compensate you for what that product can do, the value it delivers for the employer. And I'd shared this during the workshop that the employers really don't care for the most part. Some don't care at all. Maybe a few care a little bit, but it's not that common. Most employers don't care about what you want. And I remember being a young job seeker and putting that on my resume. I'm looking for a role that's going to give me this type of experience, and I really want to do this. And they're like, I don't care. And they may not say that out loud, but they're thinking it, and they're thinking it when they're interviewing people. They really want to see what you can do for them, how you solve problems for them, providing experienced examples of your work experience that shows you've done it before. And that's why we had an exercise and we talked about this of looking at in detail at those job descriptions. I do this with my coaching clients. I do coach people one-on-one. If you go to invinciblecareer.com, you can check that out. But I say, go through the job description line by line. There's requirements, there's responsibilities, and look at each one by one and say, can I do that? Do I have that? Do I have that skill? Do I have that experience? And then almost like putting it, you could do this, put it in a column in a spreadsheet. They are asking for this, then this, then this, then this. They want this. And right next to it, you say, here's my proof I can do that. I have this achievement that I did some work for my previous employer. Maybe it's even somebody two jobs ago. They want this. And you can say, I have that skill. I have that certification. I have that degree, whatever it might be, right? So you're mapping all that and saying, I have an answer for this. I literally can explain how I am perfect for this job based on this mapping exercise. There will be stuff, if you are reaching, and you should be reaching, that isn't a perfect match. You may not have a skill they're looking for. You may not have the years of experience they're looking for. You may have a complete and total gap. And you have to own that. It's not like they're not going to notice it. It's not like they're not going to ask about it. They're going to ask you questions. They're going to probe. How many people have you managed? How many years of experience do you have? Do you have knowledge of this language? Do you understand this? Do you understand that? And you have to be able to answer that. And you can say, yeah, I know it's not exactly what you're looking for, but it's close. And here's an example of when I've actually succeeded doing X, Y, Z, or whatever it might be. Or you can say, I'm a fast learner. This is going to be a non-issue. I will be up to speed in a few weeks. I will learn all about this. And I'll tell you what, and I gave this example. It's like, be confident. Be very confident about it. I remember doing this in an interview where it's like, yeah, I don't have direct experience with this, but I've done this and I've done this and this. And I will be up to speed in a few weeks. I'm a fast learner. You can look at my background. You can see that I don't have a problem learning new things. And if you think I'm not, if I'm not up to speed, fire me. Get rid of me. I don't want to be here if I can't do what I say I'm going to do. So it kind of turns it around and puts you in the seat, the seat of power, being confident about that. I talked about resumes. I think I'd shared an example of this in a tip recently where there was some eye tracking research about this, but it really boils down to making sure that all the good stuff that you want to share in your resume and your LinkedIn is loaded and prioritized at the top and to the left. The eye tracking shows that people scan from the top left and they fatigue very quickly. They don't look across. If they don't see something that hooks them and gives them something that they're interested in. So have it very scannable, have white space, have subheadings, but importantly, make sure that you are sharing quantitative as much as possible, quantitative achievements and accomplishments. And I talked about that where it's like, yeah, you didn't just do this. Like somebody said, hey, I pitch, manage, and produce a wide array of online experiences for advertising and retail spaces. Okay. What does that mean? What have you achieved? It's much more impactful if they say, you ask some questions. I do this with my coach, and it's like, okay, what do you mean by that? Who have you worked for? What is the portfolio you manage? And so changing that to say, I actually have managed, I'm currently managing 7 million in projects that are delivering new experiences for advertising retail spaces. We have contracts worth $7 million with these people. Or someone will say, hey, I designed a new checkout flow for the e-commerce platform at this company I worked for. Okay, what happened? Was it a good redesign? Did it do what it was supposed to do? Anybody can design something. It doesn't mean it worked. And they're like, oh yeah, I have that data. Or they could say, maybe I need to check. Maybe that's been shared publicly. Maybe it was in a press release. Maybe one of my product managers I worked with has that in their resume if you look at their LinkedIn. And it becomes much more powerful to say, yeah, 57% increase in checkout conversion related to my redesign. I didn't just redesign something. There was a 57% increase in checkout conversion or a 27% improvement in a client onboarding process, whatever it might be. Make it quantitative, show numbers, show money. It attracts eyes. It really does. We spent a little time talking about AI. How can you not talk about AI these days? Some people have looked into this. I've played around with it. AI is not really good at generating stuff out of thin air. Some folks tried to use it to generate resumes, for example. I tried it once playing around. My son had done it saying, hey, here's my dad, this is what he does, this is his website, his LinkedIn, whatever, write a bio for him. You know, a 500-word bio he can use for podcast, whatever it might be. The funny thing is, and the same with the resume, it was about 50% fabrication. There was a lot of hallucination. There were a lot of false facts that, you know, I had attended Carnegie Mellon. I did not. I went to Rice University. So you can't really trust it. You end up rewriting the whole thing anyway. Where I have had success, and I've tested this, is using it for cover letters. Everyone hates writing cover letters. Lots of people don't even want to write cover letters. It may be required. Maybe somebody's going to want it. Maybe you're going to apply to a job online that requires you to add a cover letter. So you can give it documents. Like, for example, what I shared in the workshop, I gave it a PDF of a job description. I gave it the PDF of my resume and fed it to Claude.ai. So I like Claude. I tried that first. And it generated a cover letter, which wasn't bad. I had to tweak a few things or a few grammatical errors, and there was some punctuation errors and things like that. But it was pretty good. Pretty good. I then fed the same thing into ChatGPT. And I was surprised. It was even better. It sounded a little more human than Claude. There is some flowery language. They get a little kind of over the top enthusiastic about stuff. So you have to go through and you have to edit it. But it's a good start. So it writes your cover letter, has all the information about the job, your resume, and it kind of maps it together. Here's why I'm good for this. Here's why, if you're looking for that, not a problem. I'm good at this. I have this experience. Pretty good. So if you have to write a cover letter and you're just dreading it, use ChatGPT or Claude or whatever your favorite AI writing tool is. Have it generate a first pass. Have it do a draft. The other thing I shared, which was a quick kind of AI tip, it's pretty good at giving you a list of questions that you should expect in a job interview. So give it the job listing and say, what are the 25 questions I should expect in an interview for this job? What are the 30 behavioral interview questions I should expect, right? So you can get a list of all these questions, and I've done this before, and it's pretty good. And then go through and write your answers. Like, what would I say if they asked me that? You know, have you ever worked with a difficult coworker? How did you overcome it? Have you ever been fired from a job? Why? What happened? Have you ever had to fire someone? Tell me about it. Take me through that. So you can work through that and actually be pretty prepared for the interview. Let's see, what else? So that's the positioning piece. Then let's see, let me skip past connecting because I feel like I talked about connecting quite a bit in the previous podcast episode. I went into a little more detail in the workshop about how to categorize your connections. So looking at people who are leaders in your connections, if you download it from LinkedIn and create a spreadsheet, who are the people you would like to work for again, or maybe work for the first time? But these are people you're actually going to go target them and say, I want to work for this person. And I've talked about how important that is to work for a good boss. Could be colleagues. These are people you enjoy working with. And it could be people in your same profession, or it could be people in other organizations that you tend to partner with. And it's people you know, or it's people you wish you worked with. And so connecting with those people. And then there's influencers. So these are people that may be in the organization in a position of power and influence that you wouldn't necessarily report to. So they could be in a completely different organization. They wouldn't be your boss. They wouldn't be your boss's boss. But they have influence in the company. And I've had this happen when I was looking for a job where someone like this made sure that I had them champion me to the hiring manager, and they gave them my resume and said, you really should interview this guy. And they made it happen. Then there's insiders. These are the people who can tell you a lot about the organization. They can connect you with people as well, but they're not in that position of power and influence that they can kind of shake things up for you. But they're going to tell you what it's really like there. And they're going to tell you what that potential boss is really like. And then there's people outside of a target company. It could be supporters. These are people who are going to help kind of light things up in the network once they know who you are. That's why it's so important to know who you are, what you're looking for, what kind of company, what kind of job. So they can say, hey, what are you looking for? And they say, oh, I know somebody. Let me make an introduction. And then the final category I had was advisors. So it's just folks that can help you. They can help coach you, mentor you, give you advice. Maybe they know people, they could tell you, it's like, yeah, I know about that company. And it's, yeah, it's a good company, you should go there. Or they have a terrible culture. And very few people know it, but I have some friends there and they know it's not a good place to work. Very helpful. I already shared that. And I shared some strategies for reigniting, strengthening, diversifying your network and why you should do that, why it's so important. All right, so let's dive into broadcasting. So this is one of the three strategies that I recommend. I already talked about connecting. So broadcasting, if you think about the pyramid that I had shared in the workshop, where the base of the pyramid are going to be lower effort, easier activities, but they have less impact. So lower ROI, return on the investment. But you can do them pretty easily, pretty frequently. You know, you could do them almost every day, every week. And then there's other stuff as you move up. So in broadcasting, you know, like updating your LinkedIn, super easy. It doesn't take a lot of time. You know, you could do a little bit every day or spread it out, but it's not like it's going to change the world for you, right? Updating all your bios across all your socials, and then doing things like being a guest on a podcast or creating your own podcast, writing an article, you know, whatever it might be, creating a video, putting stuff on YouTube or TikTok, what have you. More effort. you're not going to be able to do it as often. You can't do as many of those things, but higher impact, way higher impact. You know, when I've written articles, and I have articles that date back 7 or 8 years or longer, I'm trying to remember the first few that I put on Medium a long time ago. You know, it's more effort. It takes time to write that, to do the research and to polish it, but it returned value forever. I still have people read those articles and reach out to me and want to be coached by me. So I find clients that way. Same for you. If you're looking for a job, if you're sharing your point of view on something that's kind of an evergreen topic, right? How to create a good culture in your organization, how to find the best talent, you know, how to kick off a project and involve the right people. These are evergreen topics. It's not like they go away. You know, it's not a flash in a pan kind of thing. So when someone bumps into that and they read it and they like the way you think, they like what you said, they're going to follow you. They're going to reach out to you. They may like you enough that they're going to reach out and say, we should really talk. I have a position open in my company that I think you'd be great for. I like the way you think about this. It does happen. It absolutely happens. So part of the broadcasting is going to be working on the elevator pitch. And I can't remember if I talked about this. I know I've talked about elevator pitches a lot before. But that's a big part of what's going to happen. As you meet new people, as you refresh your network and re-engage with people, and you're trying to position yourself, so this is all about kind of putting yourself out there, you got to be clear about who you are, what you do, why you're good at what you do, you know, what you're looking for. You know, and bringing energy and enthusiasm and excitement to it so it feels real, that you really care. I mentioned that there is age discrimination in many industries, certainly in tech, quite a bit in tech. There's a whole bunch of that going on. I have a friend that invited me on her podcast to talk about it. One way to overcome that, and they talk about this with older candidates, is like show that you have energy. And show that you're excited, have some enthusiasm, because one of the fears and myths of older employees is like they're low energy. They can't work as hard. You're going to have to overcome it. You know, keep rehearsing that elevator pitch. Make it sound natural. Believe in it. Write it so you believe in it. Test it with people. See how they respond. Get some feedback. And keep tuning that for opportunities, because as you start putting yourself out there and you're including this, so you may have a kind of a wrap up at the end of an article you write that's like, here's who I am, what I do. That's kind of your elevator pitch. Every article is a sales page. I was talking with someone about this. You really should start thinking this way. Everything you put out, if you are looking for a job, if you care about your career and you want to get ahead, or you have a business and you want to get clients, if people read it all the way to the end, they like it, they're impressed, they want to know more about you, there should be a little mini elevator pitch, kind of sales pitch. Like, here's who I am. This is what I do. Here's how you can learn more. Here's how you can contact me. Right? I mean, whatever it might be. It's like, think of it that way. It's like, it's a sales pitch at the bottom of every single thing you do. And then, you know, I mentioned something about the tagline. So speaking of broadcasting, taking that elevator pitch and distilling it down to a single sentence or phrase. Because this is something you can put in your Twitter bio. I'm not going to call it X. Threads, Instagram. It can be your LinkedIn headline. And as you are commenting and posting on social media and on LinkedIn, especially on LinkedIn, you can see this. It's a mini billboard. It's a little tiny advertisement. You can see it, like I shared in a screenshot of one of the comments I made on somebody's post. And it shows my name, you know, has my photo and my name, my avatar, whatever you want to call it. And right underneath it, it says the Freedom Coach, Leadership, Career, Business. That's my little mini tagline, my billboard. And people reach out to me because of that, believe it or not. And I did it. I kind of wrote it that way so that people would say, what do you mean by Freedom Coach? What does that mean? They were intrigued. Versus using some generic statement that everybody else does. I'm an engineer at Google. I'm a designer at Meta. Okay, there's hundreds, thousands of those people. Why are you different? Why are you better? What makes you unique? So yeah, doing that. I did talk a little bit about a professional, I called a brand cloud. And this is important for broadcasting because like any company, when I said, hey, your career is a business and it's selling a product of you, companies are very serious about their brand presence and they want to make sure it evokes the right feeling when everybody sees what they write and products and packaging and colors, all that kind of stuff, right? So with a brand cloud, you can have this concept of a core attribute at the center that you want to be associated with you. If someone was talking with someone about you and they said, hey, you know, Susan is so what? What is that attribute? Or Amit is so what? Smart? Helpful? Dependable? What? What do you want people to say about you? And then having a cloud of supporting attributes around it. So there can be other things that would be secondary attributes that are also useful. And that's helpful because if you have this and you think about it, as you post content, you're trying to post something in a professional context. So you're posting something that you isn't just for fun, like a picture of food or you, hey, you're at the park or whatever, but it's something that you've written or a point of view you have about a topic. You can look at that and say, does this support the brand, the professional brand that I'm trying to evoke when people think of me? Or am I off brand and people are confused or they're disappointed and they're like, oh, I thought he was a really helpful, smart person, but he just said something really mean and snarky. You know, you have to think about that. And here's the thing I'm going to say, because I hear that I get this pushback all the time. You know, I don't want to think this much about it. I don't want to create an elevator pitch. I don't want to create a brand cloud. I don't want to be that consistent. Fine, don't. But then you can't complain when you're not getting attention. It's a game. Social media is a game. And we're all fighting for attention. And if you're not, then you don't care. Then go about it the old-fashioned way. Go apply to 100 jobs and hope somebody calls you. This is creating a whole different strategy and being really serious about how people think about you and why people remember you if they have an opportunity versus someone else. So if you want to get a job and you want people to approach you and you don't want to keep desperately hunting for jobs every time, this is what you have to do. You have to build a presence. You have to exist. You have to broadcast. And that is going to be posting every day. Posting every day some thoughts, no matter how raw, on LinkedIn, on Twitter, whatever. And being comfortable with that, just so people are seeing your name come up in their feed every day. And if you have that little tagline that says, here's who you are, and if you're sharing stuff that is thoughtful or clever, people are going to want to talk to you, right? So it's super helpful. And you do have to mix things up. I mentioned this. I've learned this on Threads. So Threads, even though some people love it and other people are making fun of it. It's like, hey, I'll tell you what, I've been on social media since, let me think, easily 2007, probably before that. Yeah, I think I was playing around with stuff like MySpace or whatever. But on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn before that too. Threads has been the highest engaging platform for me. Way more people like and comment and actually reshare my content than LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you name it. That's why I kind of made the shift and I focus more there. But what I found is if I just come in there and start blurting about professional stuff all day long. Here's my business. Here's what I do. You should hire me. You should go to my workshop. People tune me out because that's not social. That's not the social of social media. They get tired of it. And so I'd say I post 90, maybe 95% just personal stuff, you know, and I engage with other people's content. That's very important. I like their stuff. I comment. And I'm social, I'm friendly. And then I'll share something. And then I'll share something about a workshop or about my coaching or an article I've written. And then less organ rejection, right? People are like, okay, I didn't know he was a coach. I'll check it out. So they kind of prefer that. You should do that. Have some fun. Be human. With the broadcasting strategy, I talked about content reuse. So it's a really important thing because most of us are going to be doing this on our own. We don't have a team working for us. We don't have 100 people writing content, creating videos, posting on social media. It's us. It's in my case too. You know, I do, sometimes I'll occasionally hire some people, but I'm doing most of it almost all myself. So I have this content reuse and I gave an example. This podcast is a great example, right? So I will record this podcast and it becomes an episode that goes out through my RSS feed and goes to all these platforms. So it gets distributed everywhere, right? Spotify, Apple, you name it. It's now even going and creating a video on YouTube in my channel with no effort. It's feeding into the RSS, but I can take also the transcript from this and write a bit of text, and now it's a newsletter. And I can make quotes from that and share that wherever. I can share it on Twitter, I can share it on Facebook, LinkedIn. I can take snapshots from videos and use those to share something on Instagram, and I've done that. Or I've done a little slice of the video. I've made kind of meme quote posters. I've taken the blog post that was generated from the podcast and created more articles from it. So it's really a good way to create something once, and you have to start with something kind of meaty that has a lot of content, like a podcast or an article, and then reshare pieces of it, turn it into other types of content, and put it on other platforms, because long form stuff like this, like a podcast episode, doesn't work well on Instagram, right? So I need a poster or a photo or something like that. But that enables you to scale and enables people to see you multiple times on multiple platforms. And they will start to say, wow, I'm seeing your stuff everywhere. I like what you said here. I follow you there too. And you're not doing a ton of extra work to make that happen. You've already created the initial thing. And then you've started to reuse it and you're resharing it. Because most people are not going to see your stuff. That's the other thing you have to remember. The algorithm works that way. Who knows what percentage of your followers or friends see the initial post you make? Depending on time of day, depending on engagement, could be zero people, could be a handful, or it could go viral and you get hundreds and thousands of likes and comments or whatever it might be. So you're going to have to slice and dice it, reshare it, share it again. And people will say, wow, I just saw that for the first time. And you're like, yeah, I've been sharing that for 3 weeks. It's like, I'm glad you finally saw it, but hey. So that's it for this. I'm not going to go into targeting because we're already kind of over time. But I just wanted to give you a little bit of the sense of what we talked about and discussed during the workshop. It was the 2-hour workshop. So I was sharing stuff with my slides, a lot more detail, talking through things, having breakout sessions where we all kind of talked about a specific piece of it and got feedback, like on an elevator pitch. Hey, here's my elevator pitch. What do you think? Does it make sense? Do you get what I do? Are you interested? Or is it falling flat? And we had Q&A at the end. We did we actually ran over. I think we went like 30, 35 minutes with the Q&A. And then I took the whole video from that and shared it with everybody who attended. So it's on Vimeo for people to access. And with the homework document, now they can go through it again, kind of like a course. But I'm going to be doing a lot of these. I've already done the goals workshop earlier in January. I did the solopreneur workshop, how to quit your 9-to-5 job in February. And then I did this job search workshop on April 1st. I'll be doing another solopreneur workshop in May, most likely. And then I'll do the next kind of step of finding a job, which will be the job interview. So I'll do a job interview workshop most likely in June is what I'm thinking. So if you're interested, yeah, go to invinciblecareer.com or check out newsletter.invinciblecareer.com. I post this and talk about it so that people can sign up, track it, and see if it's something they'd be interested in. But hope this was helpful. Until next time, I wish you the best of luck in becoming an opportunity magnet for the best things in life.